Krishna states what's the eligibility for someone to engage in devotional service. Eligibility to engage in devotional service. Does anybody know what that verse is? Eligibility. I'll ask a different question. In Nectar of Devotion, there's a chapter entitled Eligibility of a Candidate for Devotional Service. In Nectar Devotion, what is the statement made by Rupa Goswami? Who is eligible for devotional service? In one word, Rupa Goswami says sincerity, or another word is eagerness. He gives the explanation, as with anything, there's a price to pay. And with material things, there's a price to pay. And with spiritual things, there's a price to pay. And the price for spiritual things is your eagerness to have it, or your sincere desire. You can amplify and say a sincere desire to have the spiritual connection. It's eagerness, very strong, sincere desire. So now I'll go back to Bhagavad Gita. Krishna's definition, well, in the Sanskrit begins yesham. Yesham tvantagatam papam. Yesham, unto those who are free from papam, the reactions to sins. Yesham tvantagatam papam, jananam punya karmanam. And they're exclusively engaged in punya karma, pious activity. Te dvandva moha nirmukta bhajante mam dridhavrata. So the preliminary qualification, it's in the first two lines, yesham tvantakatam papam jananam punya karmanam. They're exclusively engaged in pious activities, and the reactions to any previous activities, the sinful activities, have been eradicated. And in such condition, te dvandva, dvandva means duality, and moha means delusion. So the delusion of duality. The delusion of duality keeps us covered from our understanding of our spiritual identity and spiritual reality, and you know, the spiritual realm. It's like a cloud blocking the sun, or the light of in the sky. Big heavy cloud. Light is diminished. And through the agency of light, one can see things. And when light is blocked, you can't see things. So, the dvandva moha nirmukta, one becomes liberated from that deluding influence of duality. In such a state, bhajante mam, one engages in Krishna's service. So Prabhupada begins the purport. It's the text is chapter 7, text 28. Chapter 7, text 28. Persons who have acted piously in previous lives and in this life and whose sinful actions are completely eradicated, are freed from the dualities of delusion, and they engage themselves in my service with determination. So, Prabhupada begins the purport by saying, those eligible for elevation to the transcendental position are mentioned in this verse. For those who are the opposite, those who are sinful, atheistic, foolish, and deceitful, it is very difficult to transcend the duality of desire and hate. That duality of desire and hate is also mentioned in the 18th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Raga Dvesha Sambhutena Dvandva Mohena Bar, same language, Dvandva Moha, the duality of, the deluding duality of attraction and repulsion, or Raga, a hankering to be the enjoyer, and Dvesha, an ill disposition towards he who is the enjoyer. We have an attitude toward Krishna. And because we want to be the enjoyer. And there's an obstacle for us being the enjoyer. There's somebody who's already the enjoyer. So we have Dvesha towards Krishna and Raga towards the position of Krishna. The position of being the enjoyer of Prakriti. We want to be the enjoyer of Prakriti. So that covers the living entity with his Dvandva Moha. And when the Dvandva Moha is lifted, we can engage in devotional service with great determination. So that's the eligibility of a person for devotional service, or specifically his eligibility for transcendence. But the position of devotional service is rendered from a liberated position. And how can you engage in devotional service that's from a liberated position if you're not liberated? Or how can we even begin? Go back some steps, or to speak of liberation. How do you even begin? Because commonly, the position of being free, well, here's the translation. Those who have acted piously in previous lives and in this life, and whose sinful actions are completely eradicated. Well, who's that in Kali Yuga? Even the Pandavas. That was before Kali Yuga. At least according to Mahabharata, they made mistakes. And they had to receive the reactions for those mistakes. Right? According to Mahabharata. So, what about us? How can we be engaged in devotional service? So, the answer is, in this age of Kali, there's a means provided for us to attain that status. And that's this special dispensation for the age of Kali, and that's the chanting of the holy name. Without considering prior qualification, who's eligible for chanting the holy name? Anyone who can take it and chant it. Of course, the receiving it should be from a proper source. As much as milk is a very nutritious food, but if the milk has been touched by the fangs of a serpent, then that very milk can have a poisonous effect. We had this discussion in the Bhakti Vriksha group last night about sound vibrations, say kirtan or bhajan, or Krishna Katha that may have a poisonous effect if it's touched by the lips of a serpent or someone who has a mistaken, let's say it softly, a mistaken conception of God, say it more firmly, a erroneous conception of God, a distorted conception of God, a offensive conception of God. It can have a detrimental effect to progressing on a spiritual path if that sound vibration is tainted. So the place that one should receive that sound vibration from is the proper place. But when receiving it from a proper place, it has the effect of eliminating all sinful reactions. All sinful reactions. To demonstrate that that's a fact, Shukadeva Goswami narrates the Ajamila story to Maharaj Pariksit. In the case of Ajamila, it was even unintentional. There's a particular term, where Sanskrit term, where the intention of Ajamila was to call his son. He had no intention to call Narayan. He was attached to his son. I mean, the detail is described in the Bhagavatam. He was 80 years old. That's quite an old age to have a young son. But he had a young son. And he had 9 other children by a prostitute. And this was child number 10. And Prabhupada explains it's very common that the youngest child, when there's a large family, the youngest child has special fondness from the parents. Not that they don't care for the other children, but there's special fondness. And because it's a small child, he was accustomed to calling his son Narayan. Come here, it's time to eat. Narayan, we're going to the market, let's go together. Narayan this, Narayan that. He was calling his son, just out of affection. And so because of that natural affection, he had some attachment for his son. And so when the Yamadutas came, he was terrified. The features of the Yamadutas alone is terrifying. But he also understood what was going on. It was death, and they were taking him, at least the subtle body was being extracted from the gross body, and he was being taken away. So he was panic-stricken. And his thoughts went to his son. Narayan! Narayan! He had no intention of calling Lord Narayan. He was calling his son. So the Vishnu Dutas came and protected him. And in the discussion between the Vishnu Dutas and the Yamadutas, I'll skip the detail, but the Yamadutas made it very clear, the Vishnu Dutas made it very clear that his sinful reactions were completely gone. They said not only in this lifetime, it's true, the volume of sinful activities performed by Ajamila, what you have said is correct. It's many, 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 so many sinful activities. But you said that he's not atoned for them, and you're wrong. He didn't undergo prayaschitta by Vedic formulary under the guidance of a brahmana. But he chanted the holy name. And granted, it was unintentional. But still, that nama bas is so powerful. It can eradicate sins for hundreds and thousands of lifetimes accumulated together. That's powerful. like a fire that's so intense that you put unlimited amounts of fuel and you don't put the fire out. It just burns all the more. Powerful fire. And the Holy Name is a powerful cleansing agent. Completely. This first condition mentioned in Bhagavad Gita 7:28 is met. Yesham tu antakatam papam. The sinful reactions are completely annihilated. And the pious activities that are also a prerequisite. Yesham tvantakatam papam jananam punyakarmanam. Punyakarmanam. So, the process of chanting, or for that matter, hearing and chanting, has the same effect. From the Srimad Bhagavatam. Srinvata, Sukhata Krishna, Punya, Shravana Kirtana. The activity of hearing Krishna Katha is in itself punya. And there are grades of punya also. There's punya that brings punya that brings material benefit to the performer. Bhog Anmukhi Sukriti is the technical term. It brings merit, which then entitles one to have an enjoyable situation of life. Good birth, good education, beautiful bodily features, opulence in life through pious activity. But that's material pious activity. Then there's moksha, anmukhi sukriti, or pious activity that leads to liberation. And the classic example of that pious activity that leads to liberation is study of Vedanta Sutra, the very enigmatic, puzzling codes of the Vedas, pondering deeply over them. It elevates one to the position of moksha, if done properly. The potency is there. And there's bhakti, anmukhi sukriti. That kind of piety is immediately established, that piety that brings one's connection with Krishna is immediately established just by the process of hearing and chanting. Srinvata sukata Krishna, hearing Krishna kata. Punya shravana kirtana. Just from hearing and chanting, just what we're doing right now. Punya shravana kirtana. So, these difficult in this age of Kali conditions to be met are accomplished just by what you were doing for the past half hour. Having kirtan, chanting japa. Spiritually, what's acting upon the soul is the soul is being cleansed of, what to speak of, in a jamila's chanting, this chanting, where we're consciously chanting. And with the call to take shelter of Krishna. Take shelter of Krishna's holy name. Calling Krishna, please come. Kindly make your presence accessible to us, although we're unqualified. You're very merciful, because you are not different than your holy name. Immediately you're present. You're so kind. And by that, when sinful activities are eliminated, the reactions to previous sinful activities are eliminated, and the activity itself establishes spiritual piety, transcendental piety, just from kirtan. It's so merciful that even a child may not know the meaning or understand really what's going on. To speak of a child, even a plant or an insect, or a microbial germ, just wherever there's a spirit soul, it's acting. Because the holy name is so powerful and very merciful. And if one takes that up with some faith, te dvandva moha nirmukta, the cloud of delusion, the duality of delusion, is removed. And devotional service can be performed with great determination. And by that devotional service with great determination, access the transcendental realization. The transcendental realization of our real identity on the spiritual platform. So we can say in a common, in a reasonable way, all of us here, I'll assume, all of us here accept that our real identity is just as Krishna says, we're spirit soul. We're not this body. Our real identity is the eternal spark. That's a fragmental part of Krishna. So, the theoretical understanding of that is one thing, or acceptance of that. But then the realization of that, that's another thing. To access the realization, the chanting of the holy name is not only helpful, it's necessary. Side by side with the teaching that Krishna provides in Bhagavad Gita, because the approach to realize transcendental knowledge is not by our power of speculation, it's by descending mercy. But we were discussing this yesterday evening. We have our filters. Whatever knowledge we hear, some of it gets in, but some of it doesn't get in. Because we have our filters. We're holding on to our conceptions of life. And they're not transparently perfect and pure. They're materially, you know, grounding us to an illusory conception. So along with hearing the scripture, there's the necessary release of our material conceptions. Therefore, the word mantra is used. Man means mind. And tra means release. So, in plain language, the conceptions that we're carrying by the agency of mantra, they're released. We can let go, the potency is there to let go of the material conception so that we can receive a transcendental conception. Like, if I'm holding on to these cough drops and I want to get some of this nice, whatever it is, apple juice or something over there. You know, I have to let go of this thing that's in my hand in order to reach another something. If I don't want to let go of this other something, then it's difficult. Very cumbersome. But it's very easy if I let go. So mantra, just like we began, kirtan and japa, and then hearing the message of Bhagavad Gita. In this case, hearing some description of the glories of the chanting of the holy name. Through the chanting of the holy name, this eligibility for awakening bhakti takes place. So then we can understand the message of Bhagavad Gita with some degree, at least a beginning degree of realization. And in an ongoing way, the chanting, hearing the message of Bhagavad Gita, trying to apply it, and then continuing chanting the holy name, hearing the message of Bhagavad Gita, trying to apply it, and continuing that process, the gradual cleansing of the heart, receiving of transcendental knowledge, abiding by that transcendental knowledge, having that enter within our hearts, is the door is opened. The path can be accessed. So these two things go together. Prabhupada taught us, make it less complicated and make it really simple, by an example that Prabhupada gave, that A train moves on two tracks. Of course, now they have monorails. So it's a little different. But I saw a description of how the Chinese government, while we're spending money on wars all over the world, they're spending money on developing technology. Not just war technology, but anyway, one of the things that they're trying to develop is a train system that can take one all the way from Beijing to London in the same amount of time it takes an airplane to travel that distance. So there are millions and billions that we're spending in war technology and sending soldiers, etc. They're spending it in other ways. And then another train that will go to the southern part, from Beijing to the southern part of China. And then another one that will go right towards Hong Kong. So it's just, over a bridge or whatever they're going to do to get to Hong Kong. The same speed of an airplane. I forget why I'm using that example. Yes, thank you. Train on two tracks. Thank you very much. So, monorails are supposed to be faster because it's less friction. That's what I was thinking. So, I don't know if it's going to be a monorail with the two tracks. But the two tracks for spiritual life, Prabhupada said, as there's two tracks needed for a train, minus one, the train doesn't go very far. In fact, doesn't go at all. You need two tracks. Similarly, spiritual life has these two tracks. One is some means of purification and some means of directing your activity. So that the heart can become cleansed, that's necessary. But in that cleansed condition of heart, you need to direct your activities of life. Where do you take that cleansed condition of heart? So transcendental knowledge is necessary, guiding our life activities, our life energy. And the other side, but a cleansed condition of heart is needed so that that direction of life and transcendental activity can connect, because if our heart is pure. So both are required. And our means of purification is the chanting of the holy name. And that which gives direction to the activities of our life is Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam, our scripture study, Bhakti Shastri, or devotional literatures. Both are needed. And when both are in place in a regular way, then we can progress towards the goal very quickly and very effectively. So along with in your Bhakti Riksha group, having some emphasis on study of Bhagavad Gita, it's perfectly appropriate that part of your activity is kirtan and japa. And my understanding is this is to express the importance of the kirtan japa part side by side with the Bhagavad Gita part, which means that in your homes, same thing. Not just the Friday night Bhakti Riksha, but daily. Shrinvata svakata krishna punya shravana kirtana hridyantaksto hyabhadrani vidhunoti suritsatam. It's something that nashtabrayeshu abhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya. It's something that should be regularly performed. Nityam actually means eternally, like start it and don't stop it. But it can also mean regularly. Minimally, it means regularly. Nityam. By giving oral reception to the message and the name. Vibrate and chant. Vibrate and hear the name and the message of the scripture. These are our two tracks. These two tracks won't just take you to London from Beijing as fast as an airplane. It will take you out of the material world into the realm of spiritual realization. In this lifetime, the potency is there. Okay. Some thoughts on chanting of Krishna's holy name? Here's one other. When I spent a little bit of time looking at Srila Prabhupada's purports in Srimad Bhagavatam, where he's discussing the verse spoken by Prahlad Maharaj to his father Hiranyakashipu, where Prahlad Maharaj is outlining the 9 processes of bhakti: Shravanam, Kirtanam, Vishnu Smaranam, Padasevanam, those 9 processes. So when he's describing the Kirtanam, the chanting process out of the 9 processes, his main attention goes to carefully guarding against the offenses when chanting the holy name. Because we want to get the full effect of chanting. We want to get the full effect of anything that we're doing. If it's useful, we want to get the full effect of it. To get the full effect of chanting without offense. So while we're engaged in chanting and we're engaged in studying Bhagavad Gita, the full effect will gradually manifest if we're very careful in guarding against the 10 offenses. And the essence of those 10 offenses, or the opposite, the essence of eliminating those 10 offenses, is by attentiveness. Like the Vajante Mam Dridhavrata, being very focused and very determined in devotional service. Keeping the mind with Krishna. Being present with Krishna. By accomplishing that one thing, the 10 offenses are eliminated. If one can't accomplish that one thing, the 10 offenses will linger. And one will not get the full effect of chanting. One won't become a realized bhakta. We'll get certainly transcendental benefit. For certain. But the full benefit that we're eager for comes when we're very attentive to the chanting of the holy name, carefully guarding against maintaining material attachments, instead letting go of those material attachments in favor of trying to become or striving to become attached to Krishna. Trusting that whatever that is which we require, Krishna will surely see that we receive it. Okay, so I'll end with that, see if there's any discussion. Yeah.
Mother, I have 2 questions. First one is, you were saying how when a person chants the holy name, the chanter is elevated to the state of piety where one can be eligible for devotional service. In my personal scenario, I'm going through a phase right now where I seem to have lost all interest in chanting. So, on the one hand, we hear that chanting the holy name, even unintentionally, removes all sins and elevates a person. But in my case, I want to understand what's happening, because I've been chanting with enthusiasm and sincerity, but what's happening and why is it happening and how am I to go through this?
Well, you were going along in a straight line, then all of a sudden you went over there, so what is it an exaggeration to say that your chanting is eradicating sinful reactions? Is it hyperbole? Is it not true? It's true. reactions to past sinful activities are being eliminated by that chanting. There's a in the here's the simplest way to describe. According to Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, the unwanted things within the heart are analyzed according to their source. And one of those sources is past sinful activities. Anarthas may arise due to our past sinful activities. Those are being eradicated. But there's other impurities within the heart that have other origins. And another one is our past pious activities and wanting to be the enjoyer of the fruits of our past pious activities. And then there's another source, which is impurities that are arising due to our offenses. And as long as there's impurities arising due to our offenses, the taste for the holy name is not there. So it doesn't nullify the first one to say that the third one is operative. It's not due to our past sinful activities that we don't have a taste for the holy name, because the past sinful activities are being eradicated, the reactions to those are being eradicated. It's the unwanted things in the heart that are, or anarthas that are arising in the heart due to offenses against the holy name. That's what's going on.
So, if I accept that, so my current condition is because of offenses to the holy name, how, what's the rectification, how do I identify what is the offense I'm making in order to stop that?
Start with attentiveness. That's Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur's advice. In addition, you can address the conceptions that you carry, like what is the holy name and who are the Vaishnavas and what are the scriptures and things like that. The purposefulness behind which the chanting is being performed so that I can become free from reactions to sins and yet go on sinning. If that's the notion, then that's an offense. So you can look at what the you know, the details. Largely, it's having a, put it in gentle language, having a diminished conception of the holy name, when the holy name is actually transcendental. The diminished conception of the Vaishnavas, when the Vaishnavas are to be respected and not to be diminished. Or the scripture, holding it in some diminished conception, minimizing or blaspheming the authority of the scriptures. Neglecting the instructions of the spirit. Something that is transcendental and bringing it down to a wrong conception in a wrong place. And that's an offense. Not having complete, so you could say, well, maybe all of them. Not having complete faith in the chanting of the holy name and instead maintaining material attachments, even though I understand so many instructions in the matter. It's an offense. So, your question was, which one of them? You know, do a little inventory and, you know, a good number of them.
So, what I'm understanding is not so essential to understand, pinpoint which one is going forward.
Rather than doing the round robin of is it this one or is it that one, be attentive. Strive this one thing, be attentive. And while being attentive, as a subset, let me be careful to not offend the Vaishnavas, let me not neglect the instruction. bear in mind these important items, while the primary thing is be attentive to the chanting of the holy name.
So my second question was, if I may ask, related to the attentiveness. As long as there is desires in this heart, we are not able to pay attention, complete attention to the holy name. And the recommendation is, unless we pay complete attention to the holy name, we will be committing offenses. So
No. There's a third option. The third option is clearing. There's nam aparad, and there's shuddha nam, but there's a third option, namabhas, the clearing stage. That in the clearing stage, one is trying sincerely, like what's the eligibility for a candidate for devotional service? Sincerity. Here's the holy name. Sincerely take the chanting of the holy name, striving for attentiveness, striving to be present with Krishna when chanting the holy name. That's the third option. Something else? Yes?
Second question. As you were explaining about how should be attentive during chanting, how we should give up the daily attachments, I was thinking that I try to be as attentive as possible. I'm not able to continually be in that state and chanting. But when anarthas present themselves, like for example,
the which are what?
The anarthas present themselves.
Like present themselves, okay.
Yes. So like for example, the choice between something material and spiritual, like coming to a lecture or going somewhere else, in those cases the choice is a little bit more obvious, at least in my case where they have to come to the lecture. But something which I'm struggling with is other aspects, for example, getting up early in the morning. 4 o'clock, 3:30, let me sleep another half hour. So one of the in my mind, at least one of the yardsticks that I'm thinking about is the choice between something material, something spiritual.
Yeah.
So is it okay to proceed with that as a goal, saying that I should be chanting so that I make a choice of...
Yeah, yeah. And then the reason for choosing chanting, a mode of goodness reason, is I know it will purify my existence. So implicit in that statement is, presently I'm not pure. I know my condition, but I know this is a means to become pure. And so I'm eager to become, in my eagerness to become pure, although I'm not presently pure, so that eagerness isn't overwhelming or necessarily even consistent. But for that purpose, it's cultivation of the quality of goodness, or approaching determination and enthusiasm with a mode of goodness reason. It'll purify my existence. And I want that. Not as strongly as I really know I should want that, but I want that. I want that. So that will further enhance your execution of, you know, a devotional related goal or improvement, self-improvement, control of the mind and senses, which is basically what getting up in the morning is about.
The second part is, there are so many anarthas that you cannot identify each and every one of them, but the obvious one...
That's not the task. In any case, identifying each and every one of the anarthas is not the task. The task is be attentive to the chanting of the holy name.
I guess my question was going to be, in this case, an example of getting up early. Let's, for example, say I consistently get up early like for a few months or...
Just practice. Abhyasa. Just cultivate. Practice. Don't worry, you know, what's the reason this morning I didn't get up, and yesterday morning, and last week. each day is new, and apply yourself to that task which is before you, that you've accepted, and you're working on this particular thing. So take strength from the scriptures, take strength from the teachings, take strength from the holy name, take strength from those who are helping to assist you in your spiritual progress, and apply yourself as best you can. And if, you know, this day or the previous day or the next day is less than that which you're striving for, that's okay. Keep going and practice. Strive by right means, in the language of Bhagavad Gita. And depend on Krishna's mercy. And continue striving. And continue depending upon Krishna's mercy. And you practice like that. Towards a reasonable standard of improvement. And depend on Krishna. Someone over here? Yes.
You answer.
Okay. Yes.
Yes, chanting while the kirtan is going on in offense.
Chanting?
While the kirtan is going on, is that an offense?
Japa? While kirtan is going on? Well, what are you paying attention to when the kirtan is going on and you're chanting japa? A little bit of both, right? So what do you think? If it's an offense to be inattentive while chanting, and while chanting the kirtan is going on, well, maybe go to a place where the kirtan isn't going on and be attentive to chanting. Or just join the kirtan and chant later.
Mostly in the temple, the kirtan is always going on.
Uh-huh.
I want to chant in front of the deities, and that is mainly the case that I'm chanting in front of the kirtan.
When the kirtan is going on in the temple room, join the kirtan in the temple room. And when the kirtan, go before the deity at a time when the kirtan isn't going on. If you want to chant japa, come a little early or something. Yeah.
Sometimes I feel that I'm more focused in the chanting when the kirtan is going on. Is that my?
That's why thy first response is, where's your attention?
My attention is in my chanting.
Okay, then pay attention to, if you're paying attention to your chanting, that's the objective.
I feel I'm more concentrated on
the okay, chanting. Okay, then you've got the answer to your question.
So it's okay for me to chant?
It's okay to be attentive to the chanting of the holy name when you're chanting the holy name. Whatever is going on. Something else.
Still from one word. On the same topic. Sometimes I just, I don't know, the chanting goes on according to the kirtan's pitch, and is that okay, or is that my own?
I'm wondering how attentive you are to your japa when you're asking that question.
I'm thinking, I'm so focused on the chanting when the kirtan is going on, but that's what I asked.
Yeah. Just make sure that you're paying attention to your japa when you're chanting japa. Whatever the melody is, whatever is going on. And if you're not, then don't pretend that you are. You'll be, you know, be attentive when you're chanting japa. Something else? Go ahead, Rati.
When you began the lecture, you said that Praga and Glacier, the living entities, envious of Krishna. But usually, when we have this topic among common people, they say, no, I am not really envious of Krishna. Okay, I mean, he is God. They don't accept the fact that we are envious of Krishna. How do you address that situation?
Who are you speaking about? You're speaking about your colleagues at work who are from an Indian background? Specifically.
Because they say that, you know, we are fearing God, how can you say that, you know, we are envious of God?
Well, two things, practical and scriptural. Practical is, let's say scriptural first. Scriptural is, we would not take birth. We would not receive one of these things. I mean, this is a flag that says, this is my nature. I wanted to enjoy apart from Krishna, therefore I got one of these. Now I've got my flag furling in the wind, saying, I don't have a flag furling in the wind. Excuse me, but here's your flag. We wouldn't receive birth in the material world, a material body, if that were not so. And along with it is concomitant miseries, old age, disease, and death. So that's scriptural. That's practical too. But the flip side is on the practical platform, were it what they say is true, then they would be engaged in Krishna's service nonstop. And the converse is they would not be engaged in sense gratification at all. If it was true, but it's not true, and therefore there's sense gratification. And we're not continuously serving Krishna. We have a problem. We're taking the position of the enjoyer of Krishna's property. Challenge them. Let me see how much money you have in your wallet, and let me I'll promise you, I'll put it all in the hundi of the temple. I won't keep one paisa, one penny, $1. Give me everything in your wallet and everything that your credit card can take over to the ATM machine and take everything out, and I'll put it in the hundi of the temple. You're not going to do that. Or let's say, you know, you don't have to just put it in the hundi that shows that you're accepting everything belongs to Krishna. Are you utilizing everything that's a resource at your disposal exclusively in service to Krishna, whether it goes in Bahundi or not? That's practical. Conversely, one who is freed from that situation, whatever comes into their hand, it's not considered theirs, it's considered the property of Krishna, it's used in Krishna's service entirely. And that's just, you know, monetary resource, but everything. Every speck of intelligence and every ability and everything. Whatever facility.
Are we ready? I don't see the difference between chanting the japa and the kirtan, because even in the kirtan it's still...
That's right. So, well, the difference is group participation, and the other is for our own audition. So one is called japa and the other is called kirtan or sankirtan. Certainly the sameness or the commonness is the chanting of the holy name and chanting of the holy name. But one type and another type. And when we're chanting japa, it's we are to be very attentive, and when you're performing kirtan, you're to be very attentive. So her question was, what, you know, doing both at the same time.
Aren't the same? Still singing though?
Well, you're asking the same question again, and the holy name is the holy name. Yes, in that sense, they're the same thing. The distinction is, sankirtan is where we're congregationally chanting, and japa is where we're very focused upon. And therefore, my question, in response to her question, is where is your attention? If it's in kirtan, then join the kirtan. If it's in japa, then focus on the japa. because that's what the purpose of japa is, and the other is the purpose of sankirtan.
And he was saying, like, I'm in music, I teach and learn music, so I teach students. So we sing in praise of all demigods and also about Lord Krishna. And then Guru Chaitanya Prabhu was saying that it's like, I was arguing with him that it's about Lord Krishna, so why can't I just sing and why can't I teach that? What's offensive about it? And he was saying, It is offensive because it's just like, okay, it is about Lord Krishna, it's like milk. And then milk touched by a serpent is poisonous. So same way, people who are not in Krishna consciousness, if they compose a song on Lord Krishna, you might not get the proper feel of it, or I don't know how to express that. So
he said,
you cannot sing in praise of Lord Krishna unless it's by a bona fide.
Yeah, but is she repeating your words correctly?
Yes.
Okay.
Because,
what's your message is, don't teach this to people?
No.
What's your message?
The message is, she was telling that there are people who have written songs about Krishna,
uh-huh.
and there are people who are singing it also.
Uh-huh.
What is wrong in hearing? For her to teach is not a problem. I didn't say that you can always teach. But hearing from other sources, somebody else is singing, who is a, say, musician, singing the same song.
Is that the issue?
No.
No.
He said singing kirtan is the most purified thing compared to, even if it's in praise of Lord Krishna, it cannot be as purified as the kirtan.
That is because I was thinking about the Hare Krishna Mahamantra is something different. That is told in the scriptures. So
I'm not clear what the issue is. Are you clear what the issue is from hearing this? Let's do this. What I hear him saying is, the same question that was asked last night. The person last night was saying, when it comes to philosophy, I can understand that a contaminated conception of the philosophy is not to be heard. But when it comes to bhajan, what's the problem? Because it's just about Krishna. So what's the problem? He's saying the problem is the contaminated consciousness of the person, although the topic is about Krishna. So because you should understand this as a teacher, that if your consciousness is elevated or if your consciousness is in the pits, you're going to be less effective if it's in the pits than if it's the same song and your consciousness is elevated. What's going to be the impact upon the audience? Or here's the example that I gave last night. I think it was last night. Cooking. Here's the ingredients, there's the stove, there's the recipe, cook. Now, the person who's cooking, their consciousness is transmitted through the act of cooking. And when you eat cooking, it's not just, oh, it tastes good or not good, but it's the consciousness is being ingested by the person who's eating. And if that's true for cooking, what to speak of sound vibration? The consciousness of the vibrator is transmitted through the vibration. And so it's important, the consciousness of the vibrator. I think that's what he was saying.
Yes. One more thing.
But your question is, the frame of your question was, when I teach not just Krishna songs, but demigod songs. And Vibhu Chaitanya was saying something like, I shouldn't do that. Because it's offensive.
He did say it was offensive. He said the other day when we were singing on Lord Murga at the temple, he said I ate prasad, and then for that he said it cannot be prasad, only food that is offered to Lord Krishna.
That's right.
Supreme Lord as the
That's
prasad.
Right. That's right.
These are not prasad. These
That's
are
right.
just
That's correct.
Just food.
That's
so,
correct. Because it's very specific. Prasad means mercy. So this is a Vaishnava conception. The Vaishnava conception is you take just like in the Jagannath Puri temple, they offer to Lord Jagannath, and then they take the remnants of Lord Jagannath's prasad, and they offer to the various devatas, and to the brahmanas. And then that is then taken to the public. But it's Vishnu Prasad that's off. So it's like, you know, I brought a box of prasadam with me that's been offered to the deity. And so you take a bite of the prasad and you give some to somebody else. So, but it's, you know, it's still Krishna Prasadam because it's been offered to Krishna. You took a bite out of it, but it's still Krishna Prasadam. But if it's just I did some cooking and I offer it to you, then it's not prasadam. Or if I offer it to Durga, it's not prasadam. It's prasadam when I offer it to Krishna.
So should I not teach songs and bring
the demigod? That's a separate thing.
That's I told Guru Maharaj.
That's a separate thing.
It's like every voice, it's okay. Yeah. But
yeah, let's deal with that separately.
Guru was saying it's okay to teach our other devotees and stuff. It's just like we going to work and doing our job at the office. But make sure you bring out Krishna consciousness in your students by also teaching them the power of chanting.
It's like in Brahma Samhita. Read Brahma Samhita, read the verses of Brahma Samhita, and, you know, Ganesha is spoken of, and Durga is spoken of, and, you know, numerous, the sun is spoken of, sun god is spoken of, but they're spoken of in their position in relation to the personality of Godhead. They're doing a service, and they're honored because they're doing a very, very wonderful service to the personality of Godhead. And the refrain is Govindam Adi Purusham Tamaham Vajami. So generally the respect that's offered to demigods is not in terms of their service to the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If you can communicate that conception, that's very nice. It's transcendentally nice. Something else?
Same context. There is one more thing that she was asking, and I was telling that the songs written by various people who are not devotees, even though they have written songs on Krishna, so I was telling that will not have the potency like how the acharyas have written. The previous acharyas have written songs. So I told that also that, you know, in your...
There's so many. Jayadev Goswami and Chandidas and so many. Take those. That's ideal. And teach them those songs. Because the cook is in pure consciousness. Give them that prasada. What's the harm? Take that transcendental source, not a scholar, poet or literature person that has this good with words. One whose consciousness is pure and it's coming from realization. That's very nice. How about over here? Yes.
I'm trying to clarify my understanding of how we reconcile the concept that hearing the chanting not from the lips of the current devotee is like not touched by the serpent, with a Dhamma story.
Yeah.
Because when he uttered it, he was, you know, he's obviously the condition of a very pious, simple person.
Yeah.
And then he uttered the holy name, and it was still you know, completely potent having all the transcendental effects of it. So I wanted, when Prabhupada explains doctoring it from, you know, a person, the lips touched by, you're not touched by the food.
I got the question. I got it.
More like a person who has an inimical type of attitude toward the Lord, not so much just a simple and pious person uttering it, it makes it contaminated or causing the poisonous effects in the hearer. But you know what I mean? What type of person should be hearing somewhere is going to have poison?
Well, two things. One is, while the reactions to Ajamila's sins were taken away, his propensity wasn't taken away. If you mow your lawn, it's still going to grow. You got weeds in your lawn. Mow your lawn. The weeds will grow, you know, quicker than the lawn will grow, because the root is still there. So it's prarabdha karma, as a technical term. It means sins that are fructifying now. They can be neutralized. But the tendency to commit sin may still remain. When chanting is done with great sincerity, even the tendency is removed by that chanting. And so that's the chanting that one should hear from such a person. Now, second part of your question is, let's supposing Vibhu Chaitanya is leading kirtan, or Rati is leading kirtan, or you know, your children are leading Nisringa prayers, or something like that. It's not like, oh, I shouldn't hear that because your children aren't there yet. But if they're in this, like this third stage, the clearing stage, ideal is to hear the chanting of Shuddha Nam. But we definitely don't want to hear the Nam Aparad. And we can certainly hear from the children chanting the Sringa prayers. And in part because they're being encouraged to try to become purified and become attached to Lord Srinagadev by that chanting. They're on the Abbas platform. So that's nice.
And what exactly is the poisonous type of consciousness, you know, that would make it contaminating here? Is that my idea that someone who's got...
Yeah, someone who is inimical, as you said.
Yeah, not so much of a person.
Yes, that's the aparad.
And sort of the context that made me wonder about this is because, I'm sure you're well aware, in this particular country, there's a huge growing movement of kirtan. Like
that's right.
The yoga community.
That's right.
Sajraj Prabhu just came out
with that book,
interviewing all kinds of big kirtanis, not just Gaudiya Vaishnavas, but like Krishnadas, Dayutal, and all these ones.
Yeah.
The yoga community.
And there are persons who took great exception to that book which Satyaraj wrote, because he put on the same platform those that are on the Shuddha Nam platform and the Namabhas platform, and these individuals who are impersonalists or meat eaters and gross materialists, and that the quality of that chanting is not the same. But you know, he didn't make such a distinction because he wanted to write a book that would sell. Excuse me. Huh? That's my opinion. I shared it with him directly. He asked me, you know, what did you think of the book? And I said, you know, I don't know if you want to hear it. Oh, really? What did you think of the book? I didn't say it so strongly, you know, but it was, you know, I was a little uncomfortable with, I said I didn't read the whole thing, but just seeing the equating with these different. Now, there's another way of looking at it. Here's another way of looking at it. That's how Gauravani and others look at those other persons who are chanting. They see them as they're on a trajectory that may be at this stage, and maybe at that stage, and maybe at another stage. There's some attraction to Krishna, because otherwise they wouldn't be chanting. They'd be singing some other music. Yes, it's monetary. That's one of their incentives. It's spiritual, and that's one of their incentives. It's like being thought of as a spiritual person. But, you know, the personal habits of these individuals, well, you know, it's pretty gross. I can't mix with them like I mix with the devotees. But I can respect the fact that there's some attraction. And I see my role, this is Gauravani speaking, as through my mother and the training that I've received, somehow give a little attraction. And I heard him speak like that. That's nice, it's very, very broad-minded. But you know, my advice to him was be very careful, because you're in close quarters with these people that have this other consciousness, and lest you become like that, be very careful what you're taking in while you're being benevolent. About 3 months later, he was in New York because he had just done something in upstate New York at the Kripalu Yoga Center. And there was one kirtan singer for the first time out of a whole year that actually said, you know, my real happiness is just singing for Krishna. It was like, wow, really? Bhakti, wow. So when singing isn't with bhakti, what is it? What is the benefit being derived by those who are hearing it? What life-changing experience is going on? There's something that's going on, otherwise, you know, the audience wouldn't continue to participate. But are they becoming bhaktas from that sound vibration, although it's chanting, it's kirtan? So the answer is no, they're not. I mean, it's so incredibly slow, it's hard to perceive it. It's largely through the association, this is my opinion, largely through the association of Gauravani and Keshavacharya and Vyasaki and those devotees that are doing that service, through association with those personalities, that's elevating more than the kirtan that they're doing is elevating them. That's my personal opinion.
But, say for example, I mean, there's kind of, it seems like a growing number of these other kirtaneers.
Yeah.
If some of them are, you know, more in line with the Gaudiya Vaishnavas and not like gross impersonalists or meat eaters and things like that, I mean,
there's benefit.
They're chanting,
sure,
the poisonous effects of the people? Or
it's just, no. No.
So it just largely depends on the person.
Yeah, it depends on the consciousness behind the activity.
Yeah, I was getting confused because of the potency of the name.
Yes, but Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur says very clearly in Madhurya Kandambani, and Bhaktivinoda Thakur says the same thing in Harinam Chintamani, when offenses against the holy name are being made, the sound vibration may be there, but Nama Prabhu is not there.
Just like Krishna can live in the form of a deity.
That's right. That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And for a person who sees the deity as wood or stone, it remains wood or stone. And the receiving is not there because the offering is not with bhakti. So it's an act, it's material. The intent behind the worship of the deity, of the chanting of the holy name, or the recitation of the scripture is not present.
Wow, that's pretty amazing. The name could be there, like the form.
The sound, this is Bhaktivinoda Thakur. I'll find it for you and send it to you. Where from Harinam Chintamani, Nama Prabhu is not there. The sound is there. Nama Prabhu is not there. His giving of his mercy is when one makes offenses is gone.
In the same context, if there is a person who wants to connect with Krishna but don't want to surrender to your proper sampradaya, even their singing is not proper.
You're asking the same question in a different way.
Okay.
Yes.
Since we talked about bhakti, now the object of my bhakti is Krishna.
Yeah. The object of Radha is Krishna.
I see that.
I'm just saying. And
right.
Bhakti is an expansion of Radha.
My question is, the nature of true bhakti, does it depend on the object of the bhakti?
Yes.
Or the subject?
Both.
Which one is more important?
Well, they're both important. You know, to have, Prabhupada's example is to have conception, you have to have fertile mother and a potent father, otherwise you don't have conception. Which is more important? They're both.
I don't have an answer.
But for conception to take place, which is more important? The answer is they're both important. They're equally important. Or another context is the qualification of Shukadeva Goswami and the qualification of Maharaj Pariksit. For one to become realized through the process of hearing and chanting, one has to be a qualified either speaker or qualified receiver of that speaking. Both are necessary. Now, to have a radio, you have to have the broadcast and you have to have the receiver. You have to have, you know, it has to be on. Otherwise, the signal is there, but without the receiver. Or you can have the receiver where there's no signal.
Okay, let me rephrase my question. I shouldn't have said what is more important.
Okay.
Definitely both.
That was your question.
Both. Yes, I said it wrongly. But more importantly, is the specific nature of the object necessary?
Yes. What the sincerity is what's necessary. Where there's sincerity, Krishna will send the resources for making the object clear.
Okay.
That in the form of scripture, in the form of spiritual master, in the form of sound vibrations, that makes it very clear. And a sign of sincerity is where there's a mistaken signal, one won't accept it. It bounces, it's rejected.
Whether the sound vibration causes a change of heart. Now, I do not have taste for Shudana, and my consciousness may be such that even when the singer is actually chanting the Shudana, it doesn't enter my heart. So what should my mood be such that I do not go into the mood of offending the person who's...
You pray to Krishna that your heart can become open to that sound vibration. Please help me become qualified because I'm not qualified. It's this abhyasa once again. I know I'm not qualified. But Krishna, kindly accept. It's like Prahlad Maharaj in his prayers to Lord Srinadeva. I don't have qualification. In fact, I have disqualification. In fact, I'll tell you what my disqualifications are. But one thing I know is that you're merciful. And so I'm praying to you. Please accept this offering that I'm making. Because Lord Brahma, he's asked me to make some prayers and I don't have the qualification. But you're merciful. So if I sincerely offer, I'm confident you'll accept. Please accept. I'm not qualified. Please make me eligible. That's the sincerity. And continue to practice that. That's our position. Abhyasa. Practicing. Or, again, strive by right means. As one who strives by right means is assured of success. Yeah. Last question.
I
feel more inclined towards kirtan than chanting. Even though I would want to chant more, I cannot do more than one round every day. But I'm more inclined towards kirtan. For example, when I was listening to Sangeeta Bhajans in the car, I automatically, with that tune, I was automatically able to sing Hare Krishna Kirtan, even though I was trying to chant before that. So am I going in the wrong path or the right path? Is it okay to start with kirtan and
yep.
go to chanting?
Yep.
Or?
That which absorbs the mind in Krishna, do that. And from that strength, then you take those other things that you know are also beneficial, but there's less attraction or less capacity. But I know they're beneficial, and so I take strength from over here and apply it over there. Okay. What's next? Prashadam? Thank you all very much. Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
So, Mr. Prabhupada Swami Maharaj Ki Jai.